Well, good evening and welcome to this live stream event on the 12th of July 2022. Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics here. Great to have you on, and thanks for taking some time out on your Tuesday evening. And I hope you'll be enjoying the conversation. I did put a poll out there on the chat tonight about where you think the ASX 200 may be by the end of the year. So if you get a chance, make a vote, and later on in the show I might bring that on and talk about it. Just before I bring Tony in, I will just remind you, as I always do, that we don't provide financial or legal advice. This is a general conversation only. The chat room is moderated, so please be a little cautious about that. But I also do encourage you to chat with each other. And, you know, the community here is such an important part of what we do. So feel free to chat away. This is as at the 12th of July, 2022, if you're watching in replay. If you'd like to ask a question, use @walktheworld to get my attention. And that's to make sure that it comes into my queue so I can then get your question on screen and we'll get Tony to give it an answer. And I've also enabled Super Chat, which means that you can get your question to the top of the queue if you'd like to do that, or indeed if you'd like to make a contribution to help with the running of this, what we do here. We don't do it for profit. We do it because we think there's a really important conversation to be had, and we're trying to raise people's level of expertise and awareness of what's going on. But any contributions are obviously gratefully received. And if I don't acknowledge everyone, I do apologise. But in advance, thank you for all those who make contributions via Super Chat. OK, with that, let me get rid of that. And let me push this button here. Tony LeCantro, are you there?
Absolutely, Martin. And a good evening to all your viewers. And it's interesting to be outside the chat room. And it's such a wonderful community, and I enjoy it. And people got to realise that doing this is quite intense for me. But, certainly looking forward to some riveting conversation tonight. And interestingly, I could have been heading towards a Pearl Jam concert in Budapest, but I'm here instead. And what did spark some joy for me was seeing John McEnroe get up with the band in London. And I've actually been mentoring some younger people on finance, and I use Pearl Jam as an example, each member, as to build your wealth. And I have a new member now, so at least I'm going to get some new material. But happy to be here as always, and thanks to everyone for the questions and, more importantly, the level of support I get.
Thanks, Tony. It's great to have you back on again. And, you know, it's interesting because if you think we had a conversation a few months ago and then we did a recorded show in between, but, you know, the things are moving very quickly now. And, you know, the inflation rate's very high. The interest rates are moving up. The global situation is relatively unstable. The markets, have taken a bit of a bath, you know, some down 20%, some down a little less, a little more. And I guess your BBUS has probably done pretty well.
It actually paid a surprise distribution of $1.12, so I wasn't expecting that. I rang BetaShares and said, what the hell's going on? I deliberately invest with the thought of not getting a dividend, but they said they were just returning some futures profits to those holding it. So a bit of welcome relief. I still maintain just over 10% of my portfolio in the BBUS. I let some of the BBOZ go to pick up some tax loss bargains on the market. And I must say that selling the last week of June, it was like a packet of Tim Tams that didn't run out. I was getting absolutely bombarded with stock, and we pretty much could buy as much as we wanted or could afford. So I've never, ever seen across the board shellacking in small caps. And as they say, every sign of volatility and weakness with hindsight is seen as an opportunity. Any current or future weakness is seen as a threat. So if you believe markets are still going to operate, companies are still going to need to grow, we need drugs for human illnesses, then it was a great time to buy. But, I wish the sellers would let me come up for air or give me a chance to ring some people. But, yeah, it was brutal. And that has extended to other markets. And this is probably we're heading, I believe, for the darkest financial times we've seen, at least in our lifetime, Martin.
Yeah, and I've seen a few. I've been around through a few downturns. But yeah, so many of the things are sort of all pointing the same way, aren't they, in terms of negativity? I mean, we're going to get a CPI read from the US in a day or so, which will probably be quite strong. We've got more of the lockdowns in China, and so COVID is still bubbling around. We've got COVID cases rising here in Australia. But if you look carefully at what's happening with interest rate rises and how they're flowing through, this is going to be a really big pressure, because households are going to feel it from every front. You know, inflation, higher interest rates, confidence is down in the floor already, or here and around the world. And the real question for me, Tony, is how will corporate earnings hold up through this? Because I suspect we're going to see earnings weakness ahead.
Oh, most definitely. And I think when you're in a debt binge, when you get delusions of grandeur, just say you start to feel confident, you start to make a bit of money, you walk past blocks of land thinking you're a property developer. When you're in a debt binge, I liken it to being tickled, but that tickling turns out to being tickled to death. And now, sadly, let's strike off number one, this is going to be like being sandpapered to death for the majority of people with mortgages. It's going to affect everyone. It's going to affect everyone from the top. Even our richest people are going to take a hit. We have the RBA now king hitting us when we're down because they got their policy totally wrong. They came out and said it's plausible there mightn't be any interest rate rises to 2024. That saw more FOMO. And now inflation and the cost of living, it's like trying to hold down a beach ball at a local pool. So I think this is heartbreaking what's happening to this country. You've got people struggling as it is to put fuel in the car to make a bacon, lettuce, tomato sandwich. And now suddenly their mortgage repayments are starting to normalise when everyone was saying it's not going to normalise. And what scared the shit out of me was in the comments. I was reading the chat and I saw Patrick Salmon come on and he said an RBA cash rate between 4 and 8%. And if rates normalise, we're in for the biggest economic disaster because there's going to be no buyers for these houses at East Wilcannia. I mean, it's a shit show and we're living through it in a blasé fashion, but it's getting real now. And thankfully, I fixed my loan for 5 years at 2.64. And I actually put up the table from the Commonwealth, and that's frightening. I would have been up for an extra $20,000 a year, and there's not enough delivery jobs or writing exams on Freelancer to make that sort of money. So I wish I could be the bearer of more good news, but we need to be thumped, we need to cleanse the system and then get on with life. But, oh, my God, who needs daily financial stress, Martin? And this is going to spread to relationships, children. We haven't even spoken about crime and social unrest yet and calls to lifelines. So let's try and cheer everyone up. On that note, let's be positive.
Absolutely. And one of the interesting observations, you said interest rates normalise. I think that's a really interesting comment because you know, a lot of people are still saying, well, you know, the RBA will put rates up a bit and then they'll take them down again, right? It's worth just remembering the long-term interest rate, right, in Australia, 7%?
Oh, I had it at 6.5.
Ah, well.
So we're probably, let's split it, Martin.
All right.
But the long-term mortgage repayment rate, 9.41%.
Yep.
So can you imagine someone with the average mortgage in New South Wales paying about $100,000 post-tax to live in a house that's halving in value? That sandpaper with the rough edge.
Absolutely.
Well, it is. Let's
no,
be
it
honest.
Is. Absolutely. And yet 1% rise is a 15% increase in monthly repayments on an average 30-year mortgage, right? Every 1%. Let's just, you know, factor that into your mathematics, right? I mean, it would be disastrous. And in fact, a few people have asked me questions. This one came in a little while ago from Charles. You know, could house prices collapse 80% like Japan? Well, you know, that's a sort of ultra scary thought, but the downside risk now on house prices must be pretty strong, Tony, must not?
Yeah, I'm going to be probably a little bit more bullish and suggest that we'll probably go through an island-style collapse. I watched the documentaries on Ireland, how the kids were going to the races, flying in on helicopters, just a massive party. But they didn't have the huge debt that we have. I think the Japanese had the biggest bubble where I think part of a garden was worth more than the entire Manhattan at one point. And they are some of the biggest savers out there. I think at one point the average Japanese had 106 grand in the bank. And that's just been such a sad society that there's been articles on the elderly committing petty crimes to go live in prison, which is a much better place. So, look, I'm going to go for the Irish style. If we turn into Japan, well, I don't know what's going to be left of our economy. But, look, we're all downtrodden at the moment. The RBA, people say, well, yeah, they might slow the increase down. They might cut rates. But I don't think they've got a clue, because if they're trying to manage a property bubble, well, they're doing a pretty shit job.
Well, you see, I think that they're more concerned about the exchange rate. And, of course, you know, the US to Aussie is 67 at the moment, which is a long way from where perhaps some would want it. If it goes much further south, they've got to put rates up, because if the exchange rate drops too far, then, of course, we have big issues with our international debt. Got huge international debts in the system at the moment, more than we had previously. And that puts the economy at risk. And, you know, I want to over-egg the cake, but if you look at Sri Lanka, Sri Lanka's issues were ultimately because the exchange rate moved so strongly, they had to try and put interest rates up to try and control it, and then it all blew up. All these things are big and complicated, but I agree with you, Tony, the RBA has really not been on song. They've continued to pull the wrong levers at the wrong time. And I've seen some articles this week saying, well, the RBA will stop because they can't allow house prices to fall. But I would argue that they may have to allow house prices to fall if they have to beat inflation and because of the exchange rate.
Oh, exactly. And we have to take our lead from New Zealand, which went much quicker on the rate hiking cycle. And there, you know, prices are starting to fall off the cliff there. I'm getting a lot of tweets from the Canadians and what's happening to their markets. I watched a video on Phoenix, Arizona, which Morgan Kelly mentioned just before Ireland collapsed as the classic housing bubble. There's bubbles bursting, you know, in the likes of Austin, Texas. So this is actually a global problem, a global issue. We really nowhere to hide. And I think if you look at those bigger declines, often they come to mining towns. But can you imagine those that default on a sea change or tree change with a view that no one will ever work in the office again? And I guess I donned the suit tonight, Martin, to, I don't know, feel like a professional at some point because, yeah, it's, you know, can you imagine owning a dry cleaning shop? But I guess yogurt bars are the new dry cleaners or one-hour photoshops. So maybe the iced tea shops as well. I don't know what goes on there. Big business in nail salons as well. But, you know, This is going to get very, very ugly. This year has already been an absolute shocker. I will run through some slides when you're ready.
Okay, well, why don't we do that, Tony, and then you can lead off with, I know you posted the thing the other day, saying, I'm preparing slides early, right, rather than the last hour, so I look forward to great things. So when you're ready, I'll if you want to share your screen, and we can then put that up.
So there, got it.
Hang on a second. Yeah, it's just loading now. Give it 1 second. Yep, there you go. You're in control.
I should disclose to everyone that I am useless at PowerPoint. I'm also useless at Excel, and I don't know how to write text properly. So I spend copious amounts of time cutting and pasting, trying to fit pictures in. But anyway, so moving right along. So there's the disclaimer. Pretty much as you said at the start of the program, Martin, this is all general advice. It's not really advice. I suggest everyone goes and does their own research. Some stocks or, you know, like the BBUS came up. So anyway, it's all general, basically an ask covering exercise like we have in the chat room. So I reckon in my lifetime, 2022 would probably be the worst year that I've experienced. Certainly we have the war with Russia and Ukraine. That's been in the news. Now it certainly gets much less time. In Perth, we had a 65-year-old elephant called Trisha die. And that was sad, but she got more airplay than what's going on in the war at the moment. We've got COVID making a John Farnham-style, Daryl Summers-style comeback, unfortunately. It swept through my family. I had a couple of bad days, but I'm going to go get my fourth shot, and I'm certainly going to be masking up. I think it's we're going to have this problem again. We're going to have mask mandates, but what the mental health side of COVID at the moment is probably unquantifiable. We have youth where the last two and a half years have been taken from them. We can now travel, but has anyone been involved in the shit fight at airports where queues for hours? They don't care about your baggage. Qantas is getting bagged. So people are probably going to be reluctant to travel as well. So anyway, yeah, no, moving right along in our shitty 2022. Sad we had Shane Warne die suddenly of a heart attack. Conspiracy theorists have your own theory. He died, unfortunately. Poor old Andrew Symons died in a car accident, single vehicle. So maybe we won't really know the full extent of what happened there. Taylor Hawkins died. He had a cocktail of drugs in his system. But I think that impact was that Foo Fighters were one of the last remaining rock groups. He touched a lot of people in the music sense. But, you know, I was looking forward to the Foo Fighters concert. No longer. They've just picked themselves up. But those were three deaths of people that I pretty much grew up to admire. And so, yeah, it just adds to the woes of this year. Shinzo Abe, such a public assassination of someone that was highly regarded. He was much maligned, but to see those photos and to see that guy with that homemade gun, people saying, well, Japan has quite a minimal gun culture, but, yeah, it looked like a Nerf gun. But anyway, that was very, very sad, and that's reverberated around the country as well. So just adding to a terrible year. We got rid of these two. I wish I had hair like that. I would certainly develop a comb over. Morrison, well, he lost the election. I actually saw a documentary with on Albo and his partner. And look, he's been handed the poison chalice. He's been handed an economy that's going to go in decline. But I don't know. He just seems to be that honest Uncle Arthur type that, you know, we can trust. But I just don't think there's much he can do about the situation. I know he's driven. I know he came from a single mother background. I know he likes midnight oil. It's probably good to have a leader that, you know, shows that he cares. But again, the RBA is certainly not helping him. So anyway, so there was a rumour going that ScoMo's going to join the NRL. Well, let's hope not. So that's, you know, I don't blame Lewis there in that shot. And I look at the toilet paper roll, and this is as much analysis as the public can do. Can you imagine you're busting to go to the toilet? You look at that roll and you're thinking, well, is it enough? But you don't have the Bristol stool chart to refer to. And more often than not, you misjudge it. You're sitting on your phone. You either text your partner, or if you're home alone, you walk with your pants down. But that's really the extent of analysis a lot of people do, and they often get it wrong. But I just think that just sums up, you know, generally one of the worst years in our lifetime, and sadly it's only going to get worse. So this is a cracker. I was sitting there watching Channel 7 News, and they bring up the 40-year mortgage. You have to be kidding me. So I think they based it on $600,000 over 40 years. You only pay an extra $200,000 in interest. you're going to be difficult to refinance, and they calculated a saving of $350 a month. And here's a picture of a couple of people that in this situation would have just paid off their home. They were young, first home buyers. Thumbs up, you beauty. I'm suddenly in my 90s and I've paid off my home. It just makes you think how ridiculous this situation is to save people $350 a month. And once rates rise, I mean, that's just going to get even worse. But, yeah, big thumbs up. We'll have plenty of people that will be leaving their mortgages to kids. There's going to be a lot of implications. A lot of people in nursing homes, sadly, that still have a whopping big mortgage. I just think that's one of the most ridiculous ideas you can certainly have. So here's my Northern Beaches transformation. I was looking at Terry Hills and French's Forest. On the left, we grew up in Terry Hills. It was a beautiful suburb. We grew stuff. We played. We stayed out till the sun went down. We rode BMX bikes. Terry Hills now has a median price of $2.5 million. Back then, in the early days, you know, 3-4 times income. Now, 25 times. Absolutely ridiculous. As you can see, we got wealthy. We moved to French's Forest, and note the difference. So French's Forest, I know it's a market that Tarik follows. I think it's great. It's a bit of a bellwether. And Terry Hills has actually overtaken French's Forest. So the way I look at it, we've got the hills region. We've got Baulkham Hills, Carlingford, Castle Hill, West Pennant Hills. A lot of those house prices are starting to come off. You only have to read Cookie Boy's tweets to see that, and there's been major price discounts. We're starting to see that trend now in the Northern Beaches, and these areas have just had stupendous levels of growth. But when you think about it, you know, the downside pressure is immense, and let's see where they go. But anyway, that just shows you that when you move in the Northern Beaches, life can certainly change. Apologies to my sister there. That photo on the left isn't that flattering. So I'm going to always vouch for Perth. I know I cop it. Oh, Perth's a backwater. There's no jobs. The city's boring. You don't have a lot of cafes. You don't have enough sport. You're isolated from everyone. It takes too long to get over to the east. But anyway, Nollamara, great suburb, 10 kilometres from the city, close to Karrinup Shopping Centre, which has been refurbished. You're about 12 kilometres to the beach and you can buy a comfortable home there for about $429,000. And I don't know why people don't even consider moving. Why tolerate paying over $1 million, getting a set of financial handcuffs, if you can get similar employment and you can get away from family that you generally don't like or want to mess with anyway? So there on the right, that's from Mount Hawthorne, which I believe is the best suburb in, arguably the best suburb in Perth. And you can see there that suburb's had 34.7% growth over the last 12 months, but you can easily get into a two-bedroom apartment for around $500,000, and you're close to everything. You're close to cafe strips. You're close to good schools. I mean, in a bull market, a house with full of asbestos near a flood area is a renovator's dream. Every school is a good school. Every prison is a good prison. It's a bit like when you try and buy mining tenements on the moon. There's no such thing as a bad house. Everywhere's a pristine locale with lakes and playgrounds and world-class cafes. Well, that's just all part of the bullshit there is to sell to keep the bubble moving. And the way I look at it is, ocean glimpses or looking at water, that's going to be heavily discounted. If you build a bowling alley in your house, that's going to get discounted. Who cares about tennis courts? If I want to play tennis, I'll go and hire a court. So anyway, that's just to show that there's more to life than being in mortgage stress. Perth is a totally functional city. You know, I've been to two State of Origins with my son. I got to go to an AFL Grand Final. Optus Stadium just got voted the best stadium in the world. We have electricity here. We have cafes. You know, it's always a good Perth for both sexes. But, you know, I was just thinking that if you're going to, I always look at what's sold on the market. I look at what's sold in Perth. I leave the section blank in realestate.com. I suggested some suburbs 30, 35 kilometres from the city, but to me, Nollamara looks pretty good because as you go up from Mount Hawthorne up Wanneroo Road, it gets $200,000 cheaper every couple of kilometres. So anyway, I'm sticking up for Perth. I, as people know, they're probably sick of me saying it, I was a police officer in Sydney. I got to patrol from Bondi, Bankstown, Blacktown. I also got to work at Canterbury Bulldogs games. They were always interesting events. And I remember in those days, I actually wrote to Adidas and said, look, we're having a lot of crime problems. Can you send me some clothes? They sent me boxes of clothes and I'm dressed like a total hood. And I remember I was at Wiley Park and someone came up to me and said, which servo are you going to knock over? Because my gun was hanging out. But, you know, what an experience. And I got to deal with a lot of crime. And now you've had a proliferation of new suburbs. And that's where I see the risks increasing. We haven't had much social unrest. Surely we're not going to see anything like what we saw in Sri Lanka. But, yeah, that's all to come. And that stems from domestic violence, domestic pressure, financial abuse. We're yet to see all that now. But if rates continue on this trajectory, that's certainly where we're heading, unfortunately. It's sad. I mean, we don't deserve this shit, but if the RBA got their job right and we didn't binge on debt. So, Roger, it wasn't Kim Kardashian's backside that stop the internet today. It was Roger Brown's tweet. That's pretty brutal, if ever there was a brutal tweet. I'm not so bearish. My target over a few years is in the mid-8s, which is still super expensive if you take into consideration a normalisation of interest rates. Roger doesn't mince his words. His tweets are straight to the point, brutal. Everyone came on and responded to say, hey, Roger, what you've been smoking? I hope that scenario doesn't happen. But that just goes to show he's been harping on about rates, the bond market, and so far he's been spot on. So anyway, that's a scene from Deep Impact. And anyway, yeah, that's pretty ugly. But, you know, I saw that tweet and I had to include it in the presentation. So to me, this is the poster child of the bubble, a house at Jordan Springs for $1.35 million. You have to be kidding. Future economic students and aliens will use this as a test case for just how stupid we are to think that that's what you should be paying for a house. Hopefully it's well constructed, but you know, that to me sums it up. Thanks again to Cookie Boy as well. Now, this is a huge area of concern, mortgage stress, and those figures are alarming, Martin. You'll see the likes of Kakulis discount them, but the level of stress and I actually was going through your presentation and I said that it's mainly professionals that are under the most stress. I guess once you start to be successful, once you start to make a bit of money, that's often the path to bankruptcy and ruin. So anyway, those figures are totally, I'm scared of that. That's not a good trajectory for mortgage and rental stress. So, you know, thanks again for those. Now, what can the public do? You can get rid of all your streaming services. You can give up your coffee. You can try and get rid of your Q5. That's kind of become my vehicle of choice. I don't know. I guess it's the ideal soccer mum vehicle. But to me, all these cost-cutting measures, it's like throwing a feather into a cyclone. It's just not going to make much of a difference. And I think we're past that point where you can go through your expenditure, you can go through your garage, you can try and sell all your rubbish on Gumtree when you're competing with other people. But I just think it's too little too late now. You might as well have your multiple streaming services and your coffee. The used car market has come off, but still a great selling opportunity if you can let go of your car. So anyway, I just think, you know, too little too late now. Who would have thought we would have seen a lettuce on the front page of the West Australian, but everyone got a bit of a joke out of that. Now, there's going to be a global shortage of hummus due to a chickpea shortage. That's certainly going to have an impact on my life. But rates are going up. The cash rate is now 1.35%. It's only going to get worse. The RBA was totally asleep. We should have taken New Zealand's lead, even though they technically were probably a little bit slow. But anyway, when you see, yeah, that's a front page that will certainly reverberate. So this is where it gets interesting. Confidence levels are certainly down. That came out today. And I put there the CBA interest rates, and I look at the five-year fixed. And in my case, the difference between a loan October last year and now is roughly $20,000 per annum in interest. That is just unbelievable. Variable rates are still worthwhile based in comparison to fixed, but I think the banks know something, and that's why those fixed rates have absolutely skyrocketed. And we have a lot of loans coming off fixed rate that then revert back to much higher rates. And then you've also got principal and interest only to come off. We've got forums and now full of people sadly saying, well, I want to go back to interest only. And yeah, cue the Benny Hill theme song. I think that pretty much sums up what has been happening. And for those that are unaware, Benny Hill was a multimillionaire. He was the type that would buy a chicken about to go off for half price. He actually repaired all his clothes. He never bought, he rented. He lived a really, he was lived by himself pretty much despite his success. But every time I think about what's happening in the world, that theme song runs through my head. So pretty sad times. Now, the photo down the bottom is the tulip mania 1620 to 1637. The tulips actually developed a virus which had that mosaic look about them. Obviously, that was over 400 years ago. And what have we learnt now? I don't think we've learnt a friggin' thing. At least it won't bring down an economy, a country where the price dropped 99% and Holland went into a deep recession. We now have Matt Damon, who went out on for crypto.com. I bet he regrets that. You know, if you need the money, make another shitty movie. We have the Bored Ape Yacht Club as well. I mean, there are ways to make money. There are ways to speculate. It's funny because I've been advising on speculation for 24 years. I've dealt with thousands of people. And every new fad, there is a new wave of investors who call me a dinosaur, say that I don't get with the new age, you're missing out, it's not a bubble, this is a new paradigm. And these people think they're the first ones to discover the 11 secret herbs and spices, or the first ones to come across masturbation, self-gratification. I know there's just no other way really to put that. But, you know, dinosaurs, so-called dinosaurs like Buffett, he will come out and make the statements. He's a billionaire. If he has a good day on the Dow, he adds cheese to his sausage McMuffin. So he's a bit of a tight ass as well. So What happens with any bubble is everyone's making money, everyone's doing well until the day you decide to do it. And it's like turning up at 3 a.m. to a piss up holding one of those. That's certainly an example of being late to the party. And if anyone's interested in a vegan pizza at 3 a.m., well, they've got rocks in their head. So anyway, I have my three S's. I think life's about trying to enjoy it as much as you can. On the left there, I was emceeing a gold conference and Juliana said, I need a bag of peanuts. I'm going to go and feed the birds. And she stood there and the birds had an absolute ball. And there was lots of crowds around it. And that certainly sparked joy. And it just goes to show that often it can be the simple things. I'd never do that personally. Daisy's beautiful steak there. And, of course, Shiraz, if you can pick up that for about $20 a bottle, highly, highly recommended. So, anyway, that's the end.
Very good, Tony. Thank you very much. And I think that what you have the knack of doing is actually just showing how chaotic things are at one level, but also, you know, there's some really, really critical points there. And I think for me, the one you said that it's got to the point now where it's almost too late to do things, right? And I think that's a very important observation, because up until a few months ago, we were both saying there's still time, you can, but, you know, we're almost over the precipice now, aren't we?
Well, you know, the big switch to Perth, I think that window's closed. You also got to think that it's not too late to sell. Taking a couple of hundred grand less is not a disaster. What we have, I mean, I have this issue on the stock market. If you think your place is $1.5 million, the agent comes in and says, well, the market's cooled. There's houses selling around you for $200,000-$300,000 less. And then he says, well, let's put it on at 1.1. And you say, well, no, I want my 1.5. But that's what's going to play with people that don't have the financial literacy, that can't analyze if they have enough toilet paper for a trip. That's the sad part. I think, well, you know, during my career, obviously I'm a speculative investor. I will leave money on the table. It hurts sometimes, but that's what people have to grapple with. And I did some sums. So let's just say we have an island-style collapse, Martin. The median price halves. Once you go back to the nominal growth rate of 2.5%, it will take you 27 years to get back to that price. So, you know, when I sell anything on Gumtree, I price it to sell. And these price reductions, thanks to Cookie Boy, people are getting more desperate. Buyers are stepping back. But people don't realise is, you know, house prices in Sydney were priced like Japanese stocks. And the day the NASDAQ died, you couldn't catch a bid. And I talked to a Melbourne-based real estate agent. He doesn't tell me fibs. He's saying volumes are off a cliff. Buyers are waiting for cheaper levels. Vendors are still too greedy. And the volume has dried up. And he's suggesting 10, 15% off already. And, it, you know, I'd rather get words like that rather than official figures, which don't seem to be telling the full story.
No, unfortunately, the official indices are always lagged and late. And, you know, the thing about Cookie Boy's analysis, which I've published, I think, three shows now, I've called Operation Anti-Spruik, right? Because what I'm trying to do is just show that based on the analysis of Cookie's down, these drops are big and they're getting bigger, right? And it's interesting, there's a high correlation between postcodes where there are high levels of mortgage stress and big drops in asking prices. I don't think that's a coincidence.
Oh, certainly not. And, you know, I was reading Twitter and someone said, well, Cookie, can you post more price reductions of $600,000 to $800,000 houses? And I said, well, yeah, you probably have to head towards Broken Hill for that one. But, oh, God, isn't this scary? I just don't see how anyone can see how we're going to get out of this. And there's not going to be a soft landing. We've been set up for a hard landing. I know that once I take a bit of a hit with my portfolio, I go into survival mode. But fortunately, I'm in a role where if I work harder and work smarter, I can cover things. But there's a lot of people, school teachers, police, emergency services, a lot of other professions where their income's fixed and suddenly you have to find an extra 20, 30 grand a year. I don't know where that's going to come from, Martin. And hoping that you're going to get a big inheritance, again, that's probably not the ideal financial strategy.
No, and it is interesting, of course, because the other thing to bear in mind, Tony, is we've got $1 trillion of debt sitting there now, thanks to the large stimulus programs that were actually rolled out through COVID. A lot of that, of course, didn't go in the right direction. As interest rates go up, that's going to put a huge pressure on the budget, isn't it, just to service the debt we've got, let alone trying to deal with the budget more broadly. So as well as the private sector pressure and houses, we've got a public sector debt problem as well.
Yeah, it's debt everywhere, and I don't know how people think that it's an enjoyable thing to go out with cheap money and try and accumulate these things that don't make you happy anyway, and suddenly we're paying for it now because it just was allowed to go on too far. And you've got developed countries that once interest rates start to rise, as we saw in Sri Lanka, they pretty much declared themselves bankrupt, and their families living, you know, a lower middle class life that suddenly are wondering where the next meal comes from. So, I mean, there's a number of uprisings throughout the world happening now. There's runs on Chinese banks now as well. But there hasn't been much happening in Australia. I was actually talking to Juliana and I said, well, what you're going to see is poor people push a trolley through Woolworths, go straight to the steak section and just push the trolley out. And I think that's where we could head. You're going to see lots of queues at food bank. You're going to see people waiting for the last minute to buy a chicken or a loaf of bread. Wow, it's going to happen. And there's just no way out of it from here. It's a case of how governments manage. You know, it could be a very nasty problem. So we're going to see more countries suffer unrest. And I just hope it doesn't spread here.
No, well, you know, make a good point. And I guess the other interesting question is that if there's a big cry from business to say, bring in the migrants, you know, that'll help to answer the question of a lack of employment, employable people and wages and what have you, right? I have to say that my own view is that opening the traps for migrants to come in isn't going to solve anything much. It's probably going to create more pressure and more difficulty rather than anything else. But it's definitely a lot of business people asking for it.
Well, they can't open. They can't get staff. It's hard to retain staff. Businesses are closing. Businesses are going under due to this crisis. You can let some people in, but they're going to be mainly students. They're going to be the type that will take the jobs that Australians won't, but they're certainly not going to be house hunters on the northern beaches, Martin. There's not a hope in hell of that unless they're money launderers.
Yes, absolutely. And there was talk that the new government might be starting to power up the money laundering because we're 20 years behind a lot of other countries in terms of dealing with money laundering and real estate. Only Canada's in a similar position. That would also be another, you know, negative in terms of the drag to the downside in terms of prices. And I guess the other thought that I have is, in my surveys, you know, I see this stress, and you put the headline chart, and somebody in the chat asked, well, does it mean anything? Well, stress alone doesn't, but it tells you that people are having to make hard choices about what they buy and what they don't buy, where they put their money and where they don't. And so I'm seeing things like people not getting dental treatment, people taking kids out of private school and putting them into the public system, things like that already. And I guess the point is, as this sort of continues, people are going to have to make harder and harder spending decisions. And it's interesting, in the UK, they've just come out and said retail spending has suddenly started to drop dramatically. The reason is people have now stopped buying white goods. They've stopped buying a whole bunch of things. They're sort of hunkering down and buying the cheap low brand, no brand alternatives instead. We haven't seen that really come through yet. The latest retail numbers are quite strong in Australia, although that's inflation part of it. But I wonder whether we're going to see a real significant drop in terms of retail activity and people actually just not being able to afford to buy stuff.
Well, I think you're saying if you look at Kogan's share price, you look at JB Hi-Fi, you look at Harvey Norman, and you even look at something like Temple and Webster, which has fallen off a cliff, I think retail spending is going to suffer. The problem is a lot of our appliances will last a lot longer than what we, you know, hold on to them for. I mean, there was a craze where a TV or an internet fridge, for Christ's sake. We went out and bought chest freezers due to food shortages. So I'm going to keep my chest freezer. I've got two reasonably priced cars. Both have damage to the front driver's leather seat, which is me. I don't want to go out and buy another car. You know, car manufacturers are very good at marketing. But the problem is that a lot of people, when they get delusions of grandeur, will buy a car, but they always do it through debt. So I can see issues there. People are going to dine out less as well. I think there's nothing wrong with staying home. Travel, a pain in the ass with the long queues at airports. Yeah, we just had one big party. You could go to the shops, you could buy all this furniture, all this electrical. Really, that's just not going to make any difference to your life. But I do have an admission. I just got my fifth TV put up in my very humble three-bedroom house. And the point of that, Martin, is to have one here in the office, but each part of the house brings people together. And having a TV in the kitchen living room now makes my 14-year-old son talk to me. I know that sounds extravagant, but you know, I try and live modestly. But what makes you happy? And that's not having a house with five bathrooms, 12 bedrooms and everything else. It just doesn't spark any joy. I mean, you can drive up along the beaches of Perth. You will not see one person on their balcony. No one uses it. Who cares if you can walk across to a beach? I just think we're going to get rid of all that crap. We're going to get back to a 70s-style way of living. And sadly, we do have stagflation. And I never thought I'd see that word in the mainstream press, but, God, it's everywhere now.
Yeah, it is interesting, isn't it, how the old stagflation and recession words there, and the latest surveys for the US, for example, are more inclined towards seeing a recession. And, you know, the latest expectation is they'll do another 75 or maybe 50 next month and continue to lift rates. And, you know, pretty much the Fed has said, well, we've got to tackle this inflation thing, because if we don't, then it's going to be a lot worse. But then recession follows from that, perhaps, and the fallout from that is also not good. So they've backed themselves into this massively difficult corner. And I guess that's the point, really. You know, the whole idea that central banks, one, know what they're doing, and two, you know, you can trust them, as they've got godlike powers and they know precisely how to manipulate these levers to be able to keep us all perfectly safe. That's a myth that needs to go a long way away from reality, because they have really failed, haven't they?
Oh, absolutely. And you just look at how prices were allowed to get to these certain levels. You've got plenty of unregulated and dangerous markets where people have piled into them. They call them rug pulls. People have lost their life savings on all these scams. Everyone wants to get rich quick. It's the TikTok generation. No one's got the attention span to build a proper financial plan. And that's what's happening. That's what social media is doing to us. You just got to have that patience. But I still don't get why. I can see the stock market becoming more popular, because the ASX and the CHESS system is one of the safest on earth. So if you buy shares with a broker, you're CHESS sponsored. If that broker goes under, you can transfer your shares anywhere. You can buy and sell shares for $10 a pop. You don't have to worry about tenants. You don't have to worry about rates. And the true cost of owning a house, and if you can pick stocks, why wouldn't you have that as your vehicle? But I guess the downside is people are scared of the share market. but you just got to really plough through it and ride out the volatility, as I said in that quote earlier. But, there is a chance that down the track, Australia could have a share market bubble with PE expansion, and everyone will call it the new paradigm, and there'll be FOMO, and you'll see people in the Daily Mail that own 30 blue chip shares and their portfolio's worth millions. Because let's face it, there's people out there that are successful, but there's always a McDonald's worker in Blacktown that builds a massive property portfolio and they say anyone can do it. So again, that's the bullshit that we're spread about investments. And I've been at this game for 24 years. And honestly, I've had one client that's managed to hold a stock to a genuine 250 times. He is comatose pretty much, doesn't open his mail. Recently, about 8 months ago, I said I've got a spare kids' TV, but I don't have the screws for the stand, so I gave it to him. 3 days later, he texts me saying, can you go find those screws? So again, Captain Tight Ass, but we're sold this dream, Martin. We're sold this dream of wealth, of making millions of dollars quickly. It's a fugazi, and I know it because I'm living it. And that, again, is with property. All the propaganda we're spread, everyone's making money until you try and do it, and normally you ring the bell. So, difficult times. And now there'll be lotto syndicates with people at work for a $3 million draw. Just think of that. Normally it takes $20 million draw for people to try and play lotto. So anyway, it's not looking good.
And look, you make a really interesting point, because if you actually look at, the mainstream media, and I'm thinking of the online portals as well as some of the newspapers, thousands and thousands of articles and thousands and millions of words have been written trying to get people to invest here, do that, and it's all built on that same really, really, very uncertain and unclear idea that if you do this, you're going to make a lot of money, right? And so the concept of selling the easy journey of making money is what it's about. And the reason they do it is not because they're necessarily wealthy themselves, but because they need to actually click, get the clicks, right? Get the eyeballs, because they're actually rewarded based on the eyeballs that come through. And people need to understand the reason they're writing what they're writing is not because they necessarily believe it. They just know that it works and it gets them eyeballs. So that whole basis on which they're actually saying what they're saying is very different from what many people would assume it is.
Yeah. And, everyone comes from a poor background. I come from a middle-class background where I lived in French's Forest with a saltwater pool. No one wants to know about that. But, I was actually reading, I get bombarded with Quora articles. I actually read one, which I will mention. It said, you don't need all these self-help books. You don't need all these life skills. The only skill you need is the art of persuasion. And a lot of me agrees with that statement.
Absolutely right. Let me just acknowledge a couple of the messages that have come through. Cookie Boy, first of all, thank you very much. Contribution to asbestos awareness from the Cookie Boy Bank. That's really appreciated. We've just launched the next edition of the OS asbestos awareness site. I'm going to make a video about that in the next couple of days. 6 months ago, Jill died pretty much. So we're sort of commemorating that with the next version of the website. And we've got quite a few people who actually have written to us and said, thank you for the site, because we've actually now got property tested, and we actually, as a result of that, didn't go ahead and do renovations because we found that was asbestos in there. So it's making a difference, and so thank you, Cookie, for that. And it's worth also just acknowledging Andrew there. Thank you very much for your contribution, super chat, Andrew. Really appreciate it. Thank you for that. And Tony, I guess the other thing I wanted to ask you, I had a few people ask about the way the currency is going to go, and I guess what I wanted to do was, when you're making decisions about you're involved in the small caps, to what extent do you take the currency into account, or is it a more local piece of analysis that you do? In other words, you get to know the local people and the firm and what they're doing. Is it macro that drives you, or is it something else, something more granular?
I go through quite a long process before I push the button on a company, and I guess that takes a lot of time and a lot of it's instinct. But when I'm looking at gold producers, you've got to look at the Australian dollar gold price, which is still 2,570. I then take into consideration calls from, I mean, Goldman Sachs have trashed the lithium market, but they've turned around and said gold's going to 2,500 US. So I don't try and take too much of the currency into consideration, but I'm certainly mindful of it. And, you know, times of parity or near parity were certainly interesting. I think at the time I was trying to buy Les Paul guitars, which was another unhealthy addiction I had, which actually saved me at one point. So, you know, I've been there, Asian crisis, when we were, our currency, I don't know what we got to in the Asian crisis, but at the moment, I think our dollar's certainly a risk of going lower. And obviously it's not Bitcoin that's the reserve currency, it's the bloody US dollar. And I think the world needs to get over it. You just can't fight it. As I say, don't fight the Fed.
Yeah, well, you've touched on the US dollar. I mean, to my mind, the US dollar, they're deliberately making it as strong as they can at the moment, and that's partly to deal with the internal issues in the US. But it's having a huge fallout, of course, into emerging countries. John Adams and I recorded a show today about Sri Lanka, and we're going to put that up in the next 24 hours or so. And it's horrendous to see how the strong dollar was part of the reason why they had huge issues with their own currency. And of course, you know, ours is a 67 US at the moment and probably falling. And, you know, the US euro is 1-1 pretty much, which is amazing. I guess the question in my mind is whether the US dollar is going to maintain its position as sort of strength is 107, 108 at the moment. And the fallout from that is quite significant, of course, with the way that it translates inflation back into, say, our local economy. That's why I asked the question, really, because, you know, if you start trying to put all of these big picture issues together, it can get quite complicated quite quick, can't it?
Well, I guess the more you know, the less you're gonna make a move. People say, well, should I wait for lower prices? Well, often, you know, you can wait for lower prices, but if you're in the market, you have to stomach this. It's the only way is to buy. If the shares drop, if they're great, you buy more. So I guess once you throw everything into the Nutribullet, you just don't know what the hell's going to come out. But, you know, I take the approach that the stock market is a way to make good money if you can find the right small companies that become bigger ones. And at the moment, you know, clients probably want to punch me. We had a spreadsheet. So we're down on my model portfolio, we're down about 22%. But the bulk of that has come from the biotech stocks, which suffered due to the NASDAQ and the biotech industry pretty much. But, you know, you're going to have bad years in this game. But, you know, I used to coach T-ball. And I had three girls that were really agile. And what I'd do, I'd know that they're a good chance of getting on base. So I'd put them as my three first batters. Then I'd put my big hitters at four and five. And that was my strategy. And I think that's what you have to do with investment. You have to just get on base, get something happening before you hit it out of the park. And, I mean, it takes a while, but a lot of clients can have that one windfall that will put their kids through university, be able to pay off their debts, but you just got to stick with it. And at the moment, everything got thrown out. So we couldn't really distinguish between shit and champagne, but that's where I come in and try and help. Share prices get battered, so no one wants to talk to me. It's the same in any market, but yeah, I always think about my T-ball coaching days and what it's going to take to get there. And I mean, it's going to be interesting as to what's the next bandwagon, because we've had all these things ending in IUM. We've had all these coins that are going to change the world. Everyone's down in the dumps. You know, maybe it's hopium, imodium and copium. I don't know. Maybe there's a kryptonite bubble along the way. Maybe trading a paperclip for Bonnie Doon. But, you know, I always say music gets back to guitar, bass and drums, maybe a bit of saxophone thrown in, but let's have a bloody gold bubble. Let's have some fun. That's what I'm waiting for, Martin.
All right, we're talking about bubbles. This one from Andrew. Thanks for the super chat, Andrew. Is it time to start loading up on silver at the current price? It's around, what, 20 US at the moment. It was higher and it's come back. I have no idea how you'd value silver given the current environment, frankly.
Well, it's a commodity and it's a poor man's gold. And I think what I've suggested to my kids and those I'm trying to teach is dollar cost average it. Have the Perth Mint, take your money out each month, build up your silver inventory, because you've got to look at it. Coal and iron ore weren't that sexy. Both of those sectors have had the most ginormous runs. I mean, I remember the day I was sitting there in the office and Allied Medical, Andrew Forrest, backdoored in some iron ore assets into Allied Medical at 9 cents. I mean, that thing went over $200 a share. I mean, these things are transformational. But the way I look at silver is it could be easily massaged in a northeasterly direction. And I think it's the type of commodity / precious metal you can dollar cost average, you can build up a lot of it, and then suddenly someone is going to push it. And I go back to 2011, I think it almost cracked $50 an ounce. So it does have uses, it does have antibacterial, and I think people will revert back to gold and silver as opposed to digital tulips. But, I mean, if you can make money out of digital tulips, I say good luck to you. But, yeah, I'm bullish on silver, Martin, basically.
Yeah, no, that's very interesting. Yeah. No, that's fascinating. Yeah, and it's interesting you make the point about digital tulips, because digital tulips are rather at the down in the grass somewhere at the moment, right, hard to find. And it's interesting, I was looking at some research the other day that quite a few of the people who actually piled into crypto were younger people, particularly from socioeconomic groups who wanted to get rich but saw that as the only way to get rich. And many of them, particularly in the US, have actually lost their shirts in the process now. And I guess it's the other point, isn't it, that the level of expertise that people think they need based on reading the articles or the chats or whatever, you know, and just piling in, and what you actually need to do is chalk and cheese.
Well, I've been researching markets for, you know, and advising, 27 years? And I've only just started to crack the code, especially on psychology. That's why there's the coffee can portfolio, where the idea is to buy quality companies, put it in a coffee can and sell some each year. I admire people, early adapters that have made a lot of money, you know, the types that have, they have 30 articles of clothing in total, so they don't have to think about what to wear. And they've made their fortunes. They've been able to sell into the masses. But holding something is bloody tough. And if these people are true to their word and are charters, they would have been stopped out the whole way up. So I've got nothing against people that want to try and make their money on these currencies or whatever they're trying to trade. My son used to buy a box of AFL cards and he'd make $200 profit on it. I mean, whatever it takes to make money. But the kids today are missing out on dollar cost averaging and something called hard work and patience, which no one seems to have any these days. So one of the real distractions from this trading frenzy is these trading apps that look like someone's designed a poker machine, and kids become addicted to it. And all they've generated, they might make 5-10 grand, they might make a bit more, but they have a bad financial habit for life. That's the bad side of it. And what I'm trying to instill in my kids is dollar cost, buy precious metals, have some savings, take a little bit of risk on the stock market, build yourself up, and then go into maybe some property and do it comfortably. But there's just no financial education. We've had massively FOMO-driven markets with no regulation, no help. They've seen all these tattooed people in Lambos. They've seen the lifestyles. But That's not how life goes. And unfortunately, a lot of people, and even in property developments, are going to get caught as well. So what I've learned is you just got to back yourself. I don't care what the crowd are doing. I don't care if people say I'm stupid. I don't, you know, stay away from the stock market. Well, what the hell are we going to do now? We might get 2.5%, 3% on a term deposit. But, you know, the days of, who knows, maybe the days of 6% to 10% gross yield on a property might return.
Absolutely. Well, you know, the deposit rates are definitely going up. I had a communication from one of my banks today to say, we're putting your rate up. Well, that's nice. It makes a nice change. Yeah. Taking the rate down. Still not great, but it's better than it was. But you may make an interesting point about time in market, right? And in fact, Cookie Boy put up a post a little while ago saying maybe the thing to do is to buy something and just forget about it and just, you know, let it sort of, you know, grow. Because, of course, the fact is that over the long term, prices do tend to rise because of inflation and other things. How important is time in market, do you think?
Well, I look at the banking sector where you can buy something in the mid 30s and suddenly one of our banks goes sub 20. I think the old buy, set and forget will not work. There's very few mining companies that will become an Independence, a Northern Star, a Sandfire, all those mid caps. You have to stay on top of it. You just can't buy these and stick your head in the sand. And what I've noticed in my career is the highest point of client stress is when a stock's down 10% or the client has made 10 times in the discovery phase and they don't sell out when the stock becomes an orphan. Yeah. So it takes experience to know, is your horse going to run in the Melbourne Cup or is it going to run in the Everest? And I think that you can only do that through experience. I had someone today phone me who wants a heap of yield stocks. I was saying, well, wait. You don't, you know, there's been no greater wealth destruction than in the hunt for yield. Mm. If you want to buy bank stocks, let's wait till they do a cheap rights issue like they did in the GFC. They're going to get cheaper. You can buy outside the banks. You look at stocks like Ingham's, Bega Cheese. They've got a lot of problems. You've got hotel and poker machine stocks. I mean, that's the first company, the first style of stock I'd buy when I set up my unethical fund. But really, at this point, don't go chasing waterfalls or 5 to 6% yield where you lose 30% of your capital. So I think it's a tricky time for people in the stock market. You can dollar cost average into an index fund. A lot of Americans writing on Twitter will suggest that. If that looks safe to you, then that's probably not a bad approach.
And I guess the other point is for people who are still in the markets and have seen stocks come down, you know, 20% or so, right? Quite often, that fall, they've missed getting out at the top, so they're still in. And now the question is, well, do I ride it further down and, you know, hopefully maybe come back later? Or do I try to get out? And the get out or stay in on the way down, that's a really tricky call. And I'm certainly seeing some less experienced investors panic once they've seen the first drop and effectively then, you know, lose the capital that they as well. But it takes nerve not to do that.
Oh, absolutely. And that's what I saw during the final throes of tax loss selling. I mean, these are perfectly good companies that are having drilling, they have resources, they have clinical trials being thrown out like confetti. But that's what, you know, humans are wired to buy high and sell low. And what I feel all these emotions, but I'm, you know, as I said, if you believe in the continuance of business and progress, yep, you'd be a buyer. But, you know, people need to realize that a lot of these stocks on the ASX in the mining and oil pages are not worth their market capitalizations. What was priced at $20 million as a shell, as sure as shit, is going back to $1 to $3 million or lower as a shell. But people hold on to this. It's like playing a poker machine at the Rudy Hill RSL. You're just waiting for the next mini jackpot. I mean, the stock market is very tough and it will spit you out. But I know about leaving money on the table. I'm down, you know, seven figures from my peak. Do I regret it? Yeah. I said, I have a joke to my partner that, you know, I guess it's through faith and, you know, I'm looking after 390 people and I don't look after myself. So what can I do? But, you know, the stock market, I think, is going to be the go-to place now. But the interesting point is, Martin, that no one takes the time to learn. No one cares about Buffett, Peter Lynch, these guys who should be listened to. For people who like mining stocks, Rick Rule is probably the guy to listen to. They'd rather watch TikTok videos. So it's just the way society goes. But I think the market has been robbed of the romance of speculation, where you get your shareholder certificate, where you take pride in ownership, not having 50 CHESS statements show up in the mail when you long sold them. So, yeah, the stock market's great. I've been bashed around this year. I still think I could get into the green overall, but it's certainly been tough. But, you know, you just got to have patience. And sometimes these things take 2 to 3 years to play out. But a stock is like a community. So say there's 500 people in the community. I know who's going to panic when the Dow falls a certain level. Then you've got other people that panic. But, you know, as long as a company doesn't have debt and has loyal shareholders, it will survive.
Yeah, that's a good point, Tony. Now, this is one from earlier on. Wiser asked about Twitter, the Twitter fiasco. I don't know whether you've been following that, but of course Musk is basically trying to walk away and Twitter's trying to stop him walking away. The price is way down. I'm sure some people have made and lost around it, but that's a bit of an example of what can happen in these sort of weird times, I think.
Well, I had a thought. Does shitloads of money give an eccentric person a voice? Or were they already, you know, is an eccentric person created with money? I mean, at the moment, Twitter's full of jokes about everyone wants to work for Elon Musk so they can have his child. I don't see how one of the richest people on earth can dictate shareholders in Twitter through tweets, go on Saturday Night Live and call himself the douche king, and then that coin drops 93%. We just let these rich people have their own voice. God knows how many regulations he's broken. He wants out of the Twitter deal. You just can't change your mind like that. I just think that's absolutely insane. There's not enough regulation, and let's see what happens in the courts. But, you know, I see his feed. He's got all the followers. He can say something vague and useless and everyone likes it. But, no, it's an absolute joke and a debacle and, you know, almost as crazy as when Trump was on Twitter.
Yeah, you're right, unfortunately. Now, here's another question which came in from Zara. With price volatility and supply chains, uncertain shipping and commodity prices, deglobalization with the US bringing home manufacturing, is a local manufacturing capacity what we need fundamentally? I think there's a really important question there because our economy is narrowly based, right? We basically have building houses and digging holes and selling stuff offshore. Our economy in Australia is very, very narrow. So is there room for more manufacturing locally? What do you think?
Well, when you have to lift the minimum wage significantly, I just think wages and raw materials are probably going to cost you, and that's why a lot of manufacturing has gone offshore, unfortunately. I guess how much stuff really is made in Australia? We're just a country of real estate speculation and trying to flip houses, and that doesn't work anymore because you can't get the tradies in and you can't get the materials. So, yes, I mean, there's got to be a chance of that, Martin, but after the mother of all resets, maybe we can get back to a manufacturing industry where we actually created something that was real, tangible, and not a digitally traded asset. So, yeah, there's probably some hope, but certainly not yet.
Well, I've been advocating a need for manufacturing, local manufacturing, for quite some time. But if I talk to entrepreneurs, they say it's impossible at the moment with the settings that we've got here in Australia. And so anybody who's come up with a good idea will try and take it to the US or somewhere else to try and actually develop a business there, because the conditions here, they can't get funding. The red tape is too, you know, complicated and to navigate. And it's also a small market. So, you know, if you build something here, you've got 25 million people. If you build something and sell it in the US, you've got, you know, a lot bigger market. So there's a few issues that are actually working against us. But on the other hand, of course, if we actually rely on everything coming in from overseas, that then leaves us highly exposed to supply chain disruptions and all the rest of it. Now, we haven't got that many days of oil here in Australia. We're reliant on the supply chains feeding us with oil and pretty much everything else too. So, you know, there should be a role for local manufacturing, but actually I agree with you. The wages issues and all those other things, plus the red tape, plus the small market, makes it quite hard to do.
Yeah. No, it's sad, but, you know, it just adds to the frustration and fear of where we're heading and what it will actually take to create something real, you know, to get back to an economy where, you know, the mother could stay at home and you could, emergency services people could afford to live close to work. Things have certainly got out of whack. And as I said, it's going to take the mother of all resets, which is going to hurt a lot of people, but you know, the system's broken. So yeah, no, certainly a good question. I can understand why she's thinking that way.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, let me just give you a quick heads up on the poll. I put a poll up to start before the show started, which was, will the ASX 200 be higher by the end of the year than today, right? And the results are 65% of the people who answered said no, 16% yes, said yes, and 19% said not sure. So the consensus from the chat room is that we're going to see further falls on the markets through this year. I guess that coincides with what you were saying earlier on in terms of, you know, there's more to come yet.
Certainly. And viewers should be mindful that bear market rallies are certainly the most powerful. So when a market bounces from being oversold, it's a bull trap and, you know, shorts get wiped out. And it certainly gets very ugly. But if you go and have a look at a long-term chart of the Dow Jones, it all looks pretty calm. But if you look at 1929 to about 1933, it looks absolutely horrific. So you know, generally things will tick along. We are going to have earnings season. There has been, you know, discretionary retail stocks are suffering already. So that's probably a leading indicator. But yeah, I can see the market going lower. It's just a case of how powerful the rally. Is there going to be a relief rally in the US? But at the moment, with all this conflict, supply issues, inflation, rate rises, it's certainly not conducive to a market rise.
Right. I want to pick you up on something you said, because you said that bear market rallies can be very strong. And it's just worth unpacking that, right? So bear markets, markets come down a long way and then they basically start looking as though they're going up again. But that's not really a real bottom. It's basically up and then it comes back down again. And in fact, in bear markets, you get much higher volatility, which is what we've been seeing, right?
Yeah, a market could get thumped. You have a look at COVID, you go back to the GFC, a market could get thumped 30% and then it bounces 10, 15% in a V-shape. So, and the other thing people should know is that a bear market really is more of a reflection on the ASX 200, the All Ords, or the S&P 500. At the end of each year, there's always going to be stocks that certainly outperform. And I think the mention of a bear market keeps people out of stocks, whereas there's going to be a lot of winners even when the major indices are falling. So, you know, the press needs something to talk about. They need to say billions wiped off the stock market. They need to have their angles. But, you know, you can make money in a bear market as well. And often in raging bull markets where the indices are going in a northeasterly direction, a lot of small cap companies go nowhere and vice versa. So, I just think now you certainly have to be a stock picker, or if you have the ability to pick the next bandwagon. But, you know, I can see the next bandwagon. Everyone will jump on it. It'll be a new paradigm. It'll be the greatest load of rubbish. But that's the way we are now. And, you know, the participation rate in markets has skyrocketed. The information spread is there. During my time before the dot-com bubble, we certainly didn't have women of junior resource stocks with tattoos and bikinis, and we didn't have celebrities. Actually, I tell a lie. I go back to 2004. A gold float was using David Boone to promote it, and I think David Boone holds the record for 52 beers on a flight. So how celebrity promotion has changed, but, you know, to have cryptocurrency has opened up a whole new business for women who are a seven or above. And that's just, I just can't believe it, because in the old days of the market, you relied on your newspaper, your Huntley smaller companies guide, and a bit of gossip. So again, the romance of the market has gone, unless you get lucky with one of these women. Or men, sorry.
I was going to say.
Sorry, I'll keep the sexist comments, but the truth, it's the truth, Martin. And it's just sucking in all this money, and there's, unfortunately, there's going to be a lot of victims.
Yes, and I guess the point is that, you know, if you're younger, you may ride this through and then be able to sort of recover later. The people I'm quite concerned about, Tony, are those in their, you know, 50s and 60s who are moving towards the end of their working life, or they're thinking about retiring and they suddenly see their superannuation drop 15%, or they see the value of their property drop 20%. These people could well be actually now facing a very different form of later life than they perhaps expected even 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah, certainly working longer. The sad thing is, though, that most people in some of these older suburbs of Sydney have been handed a lotto win, but they say, well, you know, you kids grew up in this backyard and you played here. And, I mean, as I keep saying, something is only sentimental if you can afford to hang on to it. And you're right, we've had these dazzling super returns for many years. If you start seeing 10 to 20% off $1 million in super, that's certainly a hit. But, you know, people say, well, hey, I can ride this out. But it's that the psyche of it to know that this money has just evaporated. So I'm sure older people are worried, and so they should be, because we're having a society where the young have been priced out of the markets, eastern states. Yep. The elderly on these terrible pensions are struggling. You look at people that have worked all their life that can't afford heating and have to make decisions on medical and food. So it's not, you know, there's a lot of people that have made heaps of money on paper, but now it's all unwinding. But, yeah, certainly concerns about the grey workforce and how long people have to go through that. And I'm turning 51 next week, and I'm thinking, well, where's my life gone? You know, I've got to start planning for that. And a lot of super funds are going to suffer. But the real sad part is people have probably gone to self-managed and blown themselves up on rubbish, and that's another implication. And you're going to have people that have made a lot of money that are going to have outstanding tax debts as well. So there's a lot more behind the scenes of the struggle that's coming.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, as we come to the end of the show, Tony, I'll give you a notice of the question. I was going to ask you just to sort of, in a few sentences, what are the top three survival strategies, or the, you know, survival thoughts that you'd want to leave people with at this time? You know, the storm is approaching, the markets are down, the chances are it's going to get worse before it gets better. You know, what are those key messages you'd like people to have in the back of their minds at this stage in the cycle?
I think it's a time where you actually have to listen to the airline safety video and know how to adopt the brace position. I just think that it's not, if you're anywhere near financial distress, it's not too late to sell. these prices are coming off nosebleed levels. I remember selling my place in Perth. I thought I was going to get the top of the market. We had no one. Then someone walked in and liked the spa bath. So you just never know. You just can't, you can't give up. And what I heard you mention as well, Martin, in your mortgage stress video was talk to your bank. Outline it. Give yourself a stress test at 6% mortgage repayments. Get real about it. Have that conversation. I guess we all stick our head in the sand, and you have to do something about it. I think the times of selling stuff, garage sales, has passed. As I said, cutting down on vehicles, well, a lot of people owe money on them. I just think that if you're in the position, enjoy life, accept the fact that on paper, we're all going to drop some money. It's going to affect how people think, shop, and just be mindful security-wise. Just treat, don't leave your doors open. Just be aware that, you know, people are going to start getting desperate. So, unfortunately, I don't think there's a lot we can do. I think that the scene's set for what I believe is going to be a hard landing. I think that people need to look at alternatives. They need to realise that Australia is more than the East Coast. That people look for a safe they look for a place where a low price to income ratio, and they think, oh shit, I've got to move to America. But hey, we're Perth at seven times, and you don't have to change countries or learn a new language. So I don't think there's anything we can do. I just think stay humble, embrace life, and because yeah, it's going to get very nasty. But I think about how we're going to get out of this, and I don't see no one can orchestrate a soft landing or a result where everyone's happy. So, yeah, sorry to be the bearer of bad news, guys.
So the message is girls. Adopt the brace position. I think that's probably the key message for tonight.
Well, that's it. You know, there's nothing you can do. You can't get that plane back up. It's over, people. The easy money, it's gone. Getting rich on a coin, it's gone. Get out there and create something. Get back to fundamentals. Let's get back to a normal life and get off your friggin' phones and get some fresh air. I don't know. But anyway, I'll plow on with the stock market. I'll keep coming on this show and things will turn eventually.
Thank you, Tony. Well, I think that's a great point to end the conversation. Thanks for your work in putting the slides together and having the conversation. I've got to rewrite the bingo card now, you realise, but that's absolutely fine. Thank you very much. And we'll catch up again down the track, I'm sure. Everyone's saying great show, so thank you. Take care, keep well, and everyone's going to move to Perth.
Please don't. I'll happily ignore. I don't want a real estate bubble. I just want to stay in Perth and enjoy life without everyone else. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Tony. See you again. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.
So there you are, folks. Very interesting conversation from Tony. As always, thought-provoking and very, very, very important messages there. So thank you very much. We had just over 3,000 views on the stream tonight. That's terrific. And appreciate all the questions and also the super chats. Just to tell you that next week, I'm bringing Adam Stokes on, and I've posed him the question, crypto, where to now? Because I think it's time we had a conversation about crypto. So join me this time next week for a conversation with Adam about crypto. It should be quite interesting. Meanwhile, that's all for tonight. Before I go, I guess we should have one last look at the doggy cam. There we go. They haven't. Oh, Luna's half off the mattress, but apart from that, they haven't done much. But there you go. So they've stayed there all night, which is good. And so I want to say thank you very much for spending some time with us this evening. I hope you found it useful and also a little bit, of fun as well. But there were some very important messages there. Take care. Keep safe. And I look forward to seeing you next time on the live stream or any of the shows during the week. This is Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, signing off. Cheerio.